Hello, and welcome to Learning English, the daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America in Washington. This program is designed to help people like you learn everyday American English. Every day of the year on this program, we bring you reports that tell you what is happening in the United States and the world. In these reports, we speak a little slower than normal, and we use words and expressions that are easy to understand. If you practice saying the words and sentences the way we do, you will quickly improve your American English skills. This is what you will hear on today's program. In our weekly higher education report, correspondent Pete Musto will tell us about the benefits of a college education for both poor and rich students. Then you will hear Words and Their Stories, one of our most popular programs. This week, Anna Mateo will tell us about some of the many American English expressions used at this time of the year. It's spring, so some of us have spring fever. And finally, as we do every Sunday, we will present The Making of a Nation. This week in our series, we begin the story of Bill Clinton, America's 42nd president. Now, here is higher education correspondent Pete Musto with his report on the benefits of a college education.
People have long called college the great equalizer, meaning it gives students from all backgrounds the same opportunities or similar chances for success. A study released in February 2017 supports this idea. The study comes from a research program called the Equality of Opportunity Project. It is operated by Stanford University and other top schools in the United States. In the study, researchers examined tax records from about 30 million U.S. college students and their families. The tax records were from the years 1999 to 2013. The researchers then compared the earnings of families before their children went to college to the income of individual students about 10 years after they completed their studies. The findings may not come as a surprise to some. For example, it showed a degree from an Ivy League or other highly selective school helps students from low-income families a great deal. Ivy League is a term for 8 private universities in the northeastern United States. Many people consider them to be among the best for higher education in the world. The study found that about 60% of the lowest income students at Ivy League schools earned as much as students from the highest income families later in life. But the high cost and intense level of competition to attend one of these schools can be a barrier for many students. What may be more interesting is what less widely known colleges can do, says Nicholas Fleming. He is a doctoral degree candidate in economics at Stanford. Fleming says the study identified 10 less selective universities that also helped large numbers of students escape poverty. The State University of New York at Stony Brook is one example. 51% of Stony Brook students from the lowest income group entered the highest income group sometime after graduating. Fleming says this proves that any given college can be a tool for success.
From a societal perspective, these universities really contribute to economic mobility in the sense that they both admit a large share of low-income students and also provide excellent outcomes for these low-income students.
However, there are other issues to consider. The study notes that Ivy League and other top schools are less likely to admit students from low-income families. On average, a young person from the highest income background is 77% more likely to attend one of these schools than someone from the lowest income background. Also, while a college education may help almost everyone, higher income students still have an advantage. That is the opinion of Dirk Witteveen, a doctoral candidate at the Graduate Center of the City University of New York. In February, the journal Social Forces published his report on a study of college graduates and their earnings. Witteveen examined information from the U.S. Department of Education on all students attending an American college or university in 1993 and 2008. He did not compare different schools or degree programs. Instead, Witteveen compared the earnings of all students 10 years after they graduated. He found that the students born into the highest income families still earned at least 2% more after college than anyone else. Witteveen says this is because people from wealthier families have more connections that can help their children.
Some families have connections within professional industries that could lead to a good first job or a great first internship. So, more generally, this means that class is a much wider concept than just the amount of money that your parents earn or the amount of wealth that your parents have.
Witteveen suggests that almost no amount of education can take the place of these special relationships. Colleges can help lower-income students by doing more to connect them with successful graduates. Also, programs teaching skills like network building should become part of how colleges prepare students for the real world. I'm Pete Musto.
Thanks, Pete. Now here is Anna Mateo to explain some of the American English expressions used in spring.
Now, the VOA Learning English program, Words and Their Stories. This program explores the history and usage of common expressions in American English. Today, we talk about a time when half the world is waking from the dark, cold winter months. Spring! We often describe spring as a time of rebirth, renewal, and awakening. Many trees are blossoming, and early flowers are pushing through the earth. Things are coming to life. When the weather turns warm, many people suffer from spring fever. common symptoms of spring fever include not being able to focus on school or work, taking long walks, or falling in love. So, are you actually sick when you have spring fever? Originally, yes. Spring fever used to refer to an actual illness. When the weather turned warm, some people developed sore throats, headaches, or stuffy noses. The definition of spring fever slowly changed in the early 1800s. People came to use the term to mean a sudden increase of romantic feelings. Elvis Presley describes this feeling in his song, Spring Fever.
Spring fever comes to everyone. Spring fever, it's time for fun. There is no doubt now, love is in the air. Get up, get up, spring is everywhere.
These days, we use spring fever to describe a restless feeling after the long, cold days of winter. But the word spring is not just a season. It is also a verb that means something happened or appeared quickly. When you put spring and life together, you get spring to life. This expression means something suddenly becomes very active, or perhaps seems more alive. You may spring to life after hearing that a distant friend will be visiting you, or maybe your favorite soccer team finally sprang to life in the second half, played well, and won the match. But this is just the beginning. There are so many more spring expressions that mean to happen suddenly. Imagine that you are resting on the couch, when suddenly you see a mouse run across the floor. You spring into action. You jump from the couch and run after the mouse. But you miss. So that night, you leave some cheese in a small device that will snap quickly. You want to spring a trap. And it works. But when you tell your roommate that you caught a mouse in a trap, tears spring from her eyes. You feel badly, but she really should have told you about her pet mouse, Charlie. After all, your apartment doesn't allow pets, and you don't want to get in trouble with your landlord. See, your neighborhood is finally turning into a really nice place to live. There are more places to eat and shop. In fact, stores, restaurants, and cafes seem to have sprung up overnight. They moved in quickly. As you can see, American English has so many phrases that use spring to mean something happens quickly. The ones we have heard are just the ones that sprang to mind. In other words, they were the first ones I thought of without spending much time thinking about it. We end this Words and Their Stories back on the season spring. Here is a short poem by Oliver Herford, titled, I Heard a Bird Sing. It tells how a simple bird song brings a longing for spring during the month of December. I heard a bird sing in the dark of December, a magical thing and sweet to remember. We are nearer to spring than we were in September. I heard a bird sing in the dark of December. I'm Ana Mateo.
Thanks, Ana. Now we present The Making of a Nation. This week in our series, Steve Ember begins the story of Bill Clinton, the 42nd President of the United States. Clinton led the country for 8 years, from January 1993 to January 2001.
Our story begins in 1991. In February of that year, American-led forces won Operation Desert Storm to end Iraqi occupation of Kuwait. Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein considered Kuwait a province of Iraq. He had invaded the oil-rich country in August 1990. Coalition airstrikes began 4 months later in January against Iraqi targets. The ground war took place in February and lasted just 4 days. The American-led victory in the Gulf War added to the popularity of President George H.W. Bush. 1991 was also the last year for the USSR, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. The collapse of the Soviet Union brought an end to more than 40 years of Cold War tensions and fears of nuclear war. In the United States, attention was turning to the 1992 presidential election. Many political observers believed President Bush would easily win a second term. But the economy was not doing much to help his chances. The United States went through a serious recession that lasted 8 months, from July 1990 to March 1991. Unemployment rose to the highest level in years. At the same time, the federal government was deeply in debt after years of borrowing. Bush was a Republican. Democrats saw his falling popularity as a good opportunity to retake the White House. They placed their hopes on William Jefferson Clinton. At the time, he was the young governor of the southern state of Arkansas. He was gaining national attention by talking about issues like education. Bill Clinton was born on August 19, 1946, in the small town of Hope, Arkansas. His name at birth was William Jefferson Blythe. His father, also named William Jefferson Blythe, was a traveling salesman. He died in a car accident 3 months before his son was born. At the age of two, the boy was sent to live with his grandparents, while his mother, Virginia Blythe, studied to become a nurse. She married a man named Roger Clinton when her son was four. The family moved to Hot Springs, Arkansas. When he was 15, William Jefferson Blythe legally changed his name to William Jefferson Clinton. His stepfather drank too much and was sometimes abusive to him, his mother, and his stepbrother, Roger Jr. But Bill Clinton did well in school. He also developed a strong early interest in politics and ran for student offices in high school. In 1963, while still in high school, Bill Clinton went to Washington as a delegate to a Boys Nation program for young leaders. There, he got to meet President John F. Kennedy. Years later, Richard Stratton, who was president of Boys Nation in 1963, remembered that meeting.
It was a beautiful, bright summer day. It was July 24, 1963. And we were all assembled in the Rose Garden at the White House as a group, waiting for the president to come out. We all sat there, riveted in attention.
We want to welcome you to the White House, particularly because this belongs to all of you and because it's so intimately connected with the best in American history.
I was about the third or fourth person in, and he started here, and I sort of muscled my way up and made sure I got to shake hands with the president. He was quite generous. He went down the line and shook hands with a pretty good number of us who were there that day. It had a very profound impact on me. I think that, you know, it's something that I carried with me always. And I was very fortunate that someone took a picture of it and gave it to me, so I was always able to remember it.
Right after that frame, the famous frame of him shaking hands with JFK, there's another picture from the same film showing President Kennedy shaking hands with Jeff Keyes, another one of our boys, him from Florida, and Bill Clinton looking down at his hand with this wonderful look like I'll never wash it again.
Bill Clinton went on to study at Georgetown University in Washington. He graduated in 1968 and won a Rhodes Scholarship to attend Oxford University in England. He spent 2 years there before entering Yale Law School in New Haven, Connecticut. There, he met another law student, Hillary Rodham. She was from just outside Chicago, and she shared his deep interest in politics and public service. They both graduated in 1973. Bill Clinton returned to Arkansas. Hillary Rodham went on to become a lawyer involved in the congressional investigation of the Watergate scandal. That case led to the resignation of President Richard Nixon in 1974. That same year, Bill Clinton, a Democrat, ran for Congress in Arkansas. He lost the close race to a popular Republican. A year later, he and Hillary Rodham married. And a year after that, in 1976, Arkansas voters elected him Attorney General, the state's top law enforcement officer. In 1978, Bill Clinton ran for governor and easily won. He became, at the age of 32, the state's youngest governor ever. While Bill Clinton was governor, the federal government operated a detention center in Arkansas for Cuban refugees. The refugees rioted. That rioting hurt Bill Clinton politically when he ran for re-election. His opponent argued that he should have done more to get the government to hold the Cubans someplace else. Also, Clinton had supported unpopular new taxes. In 1980, Bill Clinton was defeated in his campaign for a second term as governor of Arkansas. But he regained the office in the next election 2 years later. That was before the term of office was increased from 2 years to 4 years. Clinton went on to serve as governor of Arkansas until 1992. While he was governor, education in the state improved. More students finished high school, and more went on to college. The state increased requirements for teachers and also increased their pay. Governor Clinton also expanded early learning programs for children from poor families. While governor, Bill Clinton also became active in Democratic Party leadership at the national level.
Make no mistake, this election is about change. Change in our party, change in our leadership, change in our nation. And that is why today I proudly announce my candidacy for President of the United States of America.
In 1991, Bill Clinton announced that he would run for the Democratic nomination for president. His main opponents were Paul Tsongas and Jerry Brown. Tsongas was a former senator from Massachusetts. Brown had been governor of California. Paul Tsongas later withdrew, and Bill Clinton easily defeated Jerry Brown for the nomination. Democrats held their national nominating convention in New York City in July 1992.
And so, in the name of all those who do the work, pay the taxes, raise the kids, and play by the rules, in the name of the hardworking Americans who make up our forgotten middle class, I proudly accept your nomination for President of the United States.
Bill Clinton chose Senator Al Gore of Tennessee as his running mate for vice president. The Republicans nominated President Bush and Vice President Dan Quayle for a second term. Another candidate in the 1992 presidential election was a Texas businessman named Ross Perot. He competed as an independent, a so-called third-party candidate. His choice for vice president was James Stockdale, a former high-level Navy officer and pilot. He had been shot down and held as a prisoner of North Vietnam for 7 years. During the campaign, Ross Perot argued that neither of the major candidates was taking the national debt seriously enough. He also warned of the loss of American jobs.
To those of you in the audience who are business people, pretty simple. If you're paying $12, $13, $14 an hour for factory workers, and you can move your factory south of the border, pay $1 an hour for your labor, have no health care, that's the most expensive single element in making a car, have no environmental controls, no pollution controls, and no retirement, and you don't care about anything but making money, there will be a giant sucking sound going south.
Bill Clinton criticized President Bush for not doing more about the economy and unemployment. Bush pointed out that the Democrats controlled Congress, and he said the Democrats had defeated most of his proposals. The president also talked about his foreign policy successes, and most famously, he promised not to raise taxes.
My opponent won't rule out raising taxes, but I will, and the Congress will push me to raise taxes, and I'll say no, and they'll push again, and I'll say, read my lips. No new taxes.
But raise taxes he did, and many Americans remembered that on Election Day. Bill Clinton and Al Gore won the 1992 election. They received about 45 million votes, or 6 million more than President Bush and Vice President Quayle. Ross Perot and James Stockdale received close to 20 million, or 19% of the popular vote. Bill Clinton became America's 42nd president on January 20th, 1993. At the age of 46, he was the third youngest person ever elected president. At his inauguration, the new president said there was no longer a division between foreign and domestic issues.
The world economy, the world environment, the world AIDS crisis, the world arms race, they affect us all. Today, as an old order passes, the new world is more free, but less stable. Communism's collapse has called forth old animosities and new dangers. Clearly, America must continue to lead the world we did so much to make.
But even as he took office, critics were questioning his character. There had been accusations during the campaign about relationships with other women in Arkansas. And there were questions about an investment that he and Hillary Clinton had made in a land development project in 1978. President Clinton's first term in office will be our story next Sunday here on Learning English. Thanks for spending some time with us today. I hope you'll join us tomorrow for another Learning English program from The Voice of America.